the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals, and with me recording on a Tuesday afternoon after the Cardinals season finale is my co-host, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And so we get to talk about it. The Cardinals finished 8-9. They demolish the San Francisco 49ers 47-24 in their season finale. And, you know, there was some good. And you know, this is the show where we're going to talk about episode 631. We're going to react to the show. And then we got lots of off-season topics we'll delve into. We don't want to make like a six-hour show. We got to spread the content out. So we're going to focus on off-season in our shows to come. So, Seth, tell me, how did it feel to finish the season with a win?
I mean, it was cool, man. And you know, I texted you. You and I were texting during the game, and I told you, you know, I put my money where my mouth was, you know, talking about Kyler and the passing game and what the expectation was, and came a little bit short of a nice win from FanDuel, but it was kind of what we had hoped to see. You know, and it's ironic, you watch even Josh Dobbs play for what, a 10 game span or however long it was, and you get a read on who he is as a player. I mean, he's a guy that makes plays, that moves the ball really well, and then is gonna do something dumb. And man, he lived up to that. And you know,
yes,
it was a decent game. I mean, you know, they got it to 26-24 in the third quarter, and the Cardinals just took advantage of some of those Josh Dobb dumb plays, and we're able to really open things up and finish strong. Good to see that. I think also it answered some questions that had been asked during the season that we'll delve into maybe a little bit today, but also throughout the off season and why the roster kind of construction and things like that looked how it did.
Yeah. I for one, especially just the vibe was so bad with the team and everything around, to be able to be at home, win that game, and to win going away, it was, for me, very satisfying for the game. Not for the season, but for the game. It was a very satisfying end to the season. You know, last year it was a different feeling because they played well against the Seahawks in the finale, and it looked like they were going to win, but it actually worked out better that they didn't win because they were able to draft Marvin Harrison. So we all like to joke that was the best case scenario. They played well. They could have won. They should have won, but they lost, and that was better, and they locked up their draft pick. When you're 8-9, you know, and you're wavering between the 12th and the 16th pick, it doesn't really matter. And so just to have Kyler have the statistical game that he had, to have the big plays that they have, to put up 47 points and to end up blowing out the 49ers in a game that was actually a closer game than that, than the final score, but especially the runaway at the end, it was just a cathartic release of the bad vibes for me that the end of the season had. And it allows me to, because they finished with a sweet taste, I can look at the macro of the season much better.
Yeah, and you look at, you know, that back half's going to eat a lot of people, and it should. I mean, it was an unfortunate, you know, stretch of games in a critical part of things, but to see them be able to come out, you know, against a Niners team that was down statistically this year, and like you said, kind of put it on them and be able to have another good game. This was their, you know, probably their third best offensive game of the season, even though it was their highest scoring output. You know, it's interesting to see the other aspects of it because, as we'll discuss, this was not a really strong defensive performance. And then you saw that this team is close in a lot of ways, but they have some growth, continued growth that they need to get over the hump and take that next step, which should be a playoff run next year.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's interesting how the season, like, remember last year, they were a bad team that was competitive. So they were a good, bad team. I like to describe it. Last year in 2023, they were a good, bad team. They weren't a terrible team. They were a good, bad team. They're a bad team, but they performed well for a bad team, making them a good, bad team. They were competitive. You never felt like that they mailed it in, that they were continuing to fight. This team was a bad, decent team. You describe this team as it was a very mid team of an uneven. They weren't bad. They weren't good. They had grit. Like, they looked good sometimes and they looked bad sometimes. And so they were a very middling team, which ultimately was kind of what we thought. Jonathan Gannon said it. We're there, but we're not there. Like, they're close. Like, this is a team with, you know, probably five plays, would have 11 wins and would be in the playoffs looking great. And just, they didn't make enough plays. They were good enough and yet at the same time not good enough. But, you know, I just like finishing with the win at home, especially they played so much better this year at home. That was such a relief, because last year they were terrible at home. The year before, they were terrible at home. To win five of the last six games they played at State Farm Stadium this season, that was great for the fans to see, because when you see your team win in front of you, it goes a long way. And the problem was is that they were losing their games away, the ones that they shouldn't have been. But yeah, for me overall, it was a good finish to an okay season that felt more disappointing than it should have felt, probably. But that's because of Ratchet Expedition. And we'll talk about that later in the show. But coming up next on another Rise Up Secret podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk of the Web, let's delve into the offense. What was good? What looked good but actually wasn't good? And what was there to worry about still? That's coming up next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise of Seer podcast, the SR Cardinals Talk on the Web. Cardinals had a pretty solid offensive game, 393 total yards, obviously the 47 points. They rushed for 151. Kyler threw four touchdown passes. You got Greg Dortch scored twice. Trey McBride had a touchdown, seven catches for 65 yards, five catches for 63 yards, and a touchdown for Harrison. There was a lot to like. What did you like best about what the Cardinals did offensively?
Yeah, I think you hit on a lot of it. I mean, you saw a overall offensive output, especially in the passing game, that was, you know, that was good. They didn't give up any sacks, which is, again, a nice one, you know, important. They only had one penalty. Isn't that kind of funny that their penalty...
Well, they had what they think were flagged, I think, four times.
Yeah, but only one accepted.
Yeah.
You know, isn't it kind of funny too that those penalties really do matter, right? Like, you watch the games like Carolina and stuff, and you're like, God, if this team could just ever get out of its own way consistently, and that's a lot of, you know, again, going back to what you said, this is a mediocre team that plays good football, but you can't play good football with sacks, turnovers, and penalties. And so, you know, that's kind of, I mean, that's saying the obvious, but it's so true to look at this team, right? Like, the wins this season, you know, you just look at them, those wins, you know, tie the turnover battle, win the turnover battle, win the turnover battle, tie the turnover battle, one game that they lost the turnover battle and won, but that's against a terrible Bears team, right? And then especially the back half of the season, it was just really obvious that it was those type of games that cost them. I mean, their two wins in the back half of the season, they had
zero. They didn't turn over the ball. Yeah, they didn't turn the ball over at all.
Right, and such a easy thing to say, but it's such a hard thing to do consistently. And that was the first thing, because I feel like when this team is able to protect themselves, so to speak, they usually are able to have success. So and obviously, Jake Moody sucking is also
you know, 100% is going to happen, right? You know, 100% is what can happen, because the Cardinals have moved on from Matt Prater signing with the 49ers. 100%, because that's how teams do it. They draft a guy, or they have a young kicker that they really like, and he becomes unreliable, and they move on and pay a very old, very reliable kicker. The Cardinals have done this like what, four times?
Yeah.
they went from Jay Feely to Chandler Catanzaro, and after Catanzaro went flaky, they went to Phil Dawson, and then Phil Dawson got over the hill, so they went with Zane Gonzalez, who looked great and then didn't look great, Matt Prater, and now they got Chad Ryland on the cheap. And so it's the pendulum that swings back and forth. That, you know, unless Prater says he's done, I would be 100% unshocked if he signs with San Francisco next offseason or this coming offseason.
Yeah, and then when the Cardinals get Jake Moody and he becomes an all-pro, right? Because that's what's really happened the last several times a kicker gets drafted early, right? Like,
that's so weird.
They struggle. I think it's the expectations. That's a conversation we can have another day. But I think it's the expectations, man. Like, you go in, and especially think about the teams and the rosters that have drafted kickers lately. Like, you go in and you get drafted by the San Francisco. I mean, we ran through the gauntlet of all their stuff yesterday or last week. And it's like, hey, what all we need to take that final step is a kicker. All right, I'm a 22-year-old that has never kicked for money before, so this should be easy, right? Like, it's just, yeah, it's just wild to see that. But yeah, I mean, you had that. Like, the offense just felt, and think about the drives, Jess, right? 45 yards for a touchdown, 70 yards for a touchdown, 49 yards for a touchdown, 70 yards for a touchdown. You know, the short drive, obviously, 39 yards for a touchdown is cool. And then, you know, you kind of, we'll talk about the last touchdown drive shortly, but this, you know, this was just, it's something that we didn't see consistently. And that's,
what was interesting about the possessions? They had more, they only had one 10-play drive. A lot of their games this year, a lot of the way that their offense has been very methodical, they got, you know, they had, well, they had shorter fields a few times, but they were happening in 7-8 plays rather close to 10, 12, 13 plays. So they were getting slightly more chunks. And right. that for me, offensively, what my favorite thing was, it wasn't the four touchdown passes for Kyler, though that makes his year look statistically so much better. It was the fact that they were getting important plays made by more than just Trey McBride and Marvin Harrison. The passing game had some pop to it, and that wasn't just McBride and Harrison. It was Zay Jones with four catches for 46 yards. He had two really nice plays. Greg Dortch got involved and was, in a very Greg Dortch way, you know, used perfectly. He made plays with the ball in his hands, and so it wasn't just grinding with James Conner, tossing the ball to Trey McBride and hoping that Harrison could do something. The passing game had threats. They had five different guys have four catches or more. Now, they only had six, you know, sometimes you like to see eight or nine guys catching the ball. But I think it's more significant to have a moderate number of players have an impactful number of receptions, and to have five guys with four catches or more was really kind of fun to see, because, you know, Zay Jones coming in, you know, I think as we're going to go into the offseason, I think receiver is still an important position to fill. It's not a 100, like 1A, like 1A, 1B priority. I think you still have to address the defense, the edge, especially. You got to figure out what you're doing at guard. But to get guys more than just the regular, the usual suspects making plays more than once, like Zay Jones was having like a catch every other game, and to get him 4 for 46, I know Michael Wilson was out, but that's the type of thing that Zay should have been doing, or that the role that Zay, the impact that Zay should have had as a guy who's been an 800 yard receiver in his career.
But Jess, we talked about this too, like a lot of it comes down to play calling at times too.
And yeah, 100%.
You know, I looked at the game, and it was really interesting to see how they're utilizing people in this game. You know, you had Trey McBride, right? And he caught two screen passes. Marvin Harrison, most of his, again, attempts were 10-plus yards down the field. That's something that I think needs to get rectified. But it is what it is. You know, you had Greg Dortch. He caught two screen passes. And did you kind of wonder, like, hey, where's that been all season?
Right? That is an important – and I think the absence of James Conner, the reason – like, I think Drew Petzing gets overly reliant.
I was going to say, he had to be a little more creative, yeah.
Right. We'll just give the ball to James, and he will get us going. And that can work. But it's not, I don't think it's good for the overall part of the offense. I think sometimes you do your quarterback a disservice if you are heavy run, because you never allow your quarterback to get any sort of rhythm. And sure, if you can win, if you're winning games that way, but you also need to let your quarterback eat. You need your receivers to eat, because then that creates balance. It creates balance in the instance where the run game, which, by the way, one of the things that wasn't very good was the run game. And you look at the raw numbers, you're like, what are you talking about? There was for 151 yards. It was another game with over 50. I will say this. Yes, the raw numbers at the end were good. If you watched the game, San Francisco played the run better than they've played in 2 months. Michael Carter, 17 carries for 43 yards. He had a tough going. And they kept trying to run, which is good, but I don't want to pretend that they ran the ball well. 46 of those 151 yards came on Tony Jones, his 46 yard touchdown run at the end of the game. And then another 22 came on a non-offensive play when DJ Dallas took the direct snap on the fake punt and ran 22 yards. So you had 68 of your 151 yards on two plays. One, that's a fluky special teams play, and one, that was a garbage time touchdown win. And you do count that, but the game, it was already a blowout, and that was the cherry on top. To get a guy like Tony Jones, one of those Amari DiMarcado breakout runs, something that he'll remember for the rest of his life. That's exciting. But this is the first game in a while where it felt like the run game just wasn't working. And kudos to Drew Petzing for mixing in some passing schemes, and for the 49ers, who entered the game without D'Amador Lenore, lost Renardo Green, lost both their safeties during the game. It opened up a passing game that was kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, and it's just one of those situations that, again, you'd like to see it more consistently. But, you know, you can't be too upset over the outcome and things of that nature. And you know, you look at this passing chart this week, and to see, especially in the intermediate, you know, to go – to go five for seven, to have nearly 100 yards passing in the intermediate with the touchdown. That's big. And that's what you kind of have been missing this season, is the consistency. And that's going to be the kind of buzzword all offseason, right? Like consistency. And can there be consistency from everybody, from the coaching staff down to the quarterback down to the players, and how that works out. So that'll be what we kind of look forward to as the season goes along, because like you said, the numbers are fine in this game, but the reality was the run game wasn't good. And so for this to be a game that gets carried from the passing game shows that it can be done. And again, we have to take it with a grain of salt about the talent that they were facing, but it can be done. And it should continue to be something that is built on and grown through.
Absolutely. Coming up next on the Rising Sierra podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk on the way. Let's move on to the defensive side of the ball. Talk about how we came away from that game. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. Defensive side of the ball, the 49ers actually outdid the Cardinals offensively with 436 yards. They rushed for 138. Josh Dobbs passed for 326 and a pair of touchdowns. Patrick Taylor went for 17 carries for 109. And yeah, then they had a couple of busted coverages, namely 1-2-1 Kyle Juszczyk. And I was last week when we had our preview show. Honestly, I think it was Sunday when I was looking at the prop bets when I published my props. I said anytime touchdown to Kyle Juszczyk, but I, you know, he'd only had one touchdown all year, and I was, you know, last week. And had it done that, you'd have gotten plus 750 on Kyle Juszczyk for the anytime touchdown. But Juszczyk tends to do that against the Cardinals. Defensively, like how they played San Francisco's offense, it wasn't a strong performance. I mean, you got Zaven Collins getting a sack, getting credited for that sack on that fumble, getting him 300,000. Julian Okwara had a nice sack as well. They've had the three takeaways. But Patrick Taylor rushes for 109 yards on over six yards a carry. Josh Dobbs torches you for 326 yards and only had on 43 passing attempts, only had 14 incompletions, so he completed 67% of his passes. And so it wasn't a strong defensive performance, but they did lose two of their top cornerbacks as Sean Murphy Bunting got tossed with Juwan Jennings, which, by the way, was very, very beneficial for the Cardinals as he is their top receiver these days. Sadly, Juwan Jennings, because of those tussles that he had with Star Thomas and Sean Murphy Bunting, he had seven catches for 52 yards in the second quarter. He needed 77 to get to 1,000 on the season. He got tossed 25 yards short. Bummer for him. Bummer for him. But you know, as a fan, I'm like, dummy, what are you doing?
Right. So it'll be interesting to see where they come back to, right? Like, what is their retool? Because, I mean, let's agree, they don't need to rebuild anything, right? But, like, how does their retool look?
Are they just going to run it back with all the guys that got hurt because they have great players who are injured?
Yeah, but at the same time, like this is, like you said, like can you run it back? Like, can you justify it for that team? And that's what's going to be what's interesting to follow along with.
Yeah. The one thing that was cool is that basically, you know, Josh Dobbs looked good until he didn't. here's the thing. And I remembered, I talked about it in the press box with Donnie Drew and Bo Brack out there. And it was a classic Josh Dobbs game. When does Dobbs look pretty solid? When they're playing from ahead or even.
Yeah.
What happens? You fall behind by a score. He melts down. And that's when the turnovers happen. And that's what happened. He threw the two interceptions. The first interception by Sean Murphy Bunton, that was fantastic. In fact, both interceptions were fantastic plays by the defenders. Murphy Bunting's interception on the sideline was a very good catch. Keytrell Clark's, I don't know how he got his hands under that, but he did. But, I mean, that was well-schemed because Buda Baker talked about it after the game. He said, you know, that was someone was going to blitz and it was my turn. And he told Keytrell, like, jump that route. And so the ball bounced off. Dobbs got it out quickly, but it bounced off Pearsall's hands, and Keytrell made the play. And Rabbit made the play on Dobbs's rush when he stripped and knocked the ball out. And so, like you said on the show last week, Dobbs wants to turn the ball over. He does, and he makes plays. And especially when you get him a little off schedule, he was really good with the ball. He was getting the ball to his receivers. He was making plays down the field. And then when there was a little bit of adversity, he crumbles. And that's kind of what the Cardinals needed, because the Cardinals offensively played well. Defensively, they weren't that great, but they weathered the storm and made plays. And so, you know, the 49ers were 5 of 13 on third down. That's pretty all right. 436 total yards. But the raw numbers, I mean, they had the two sacks. San Francisco punted only twice. But their defense was good enough. But it wasn't good. And it was something you talked about last week. They made plays on the ball. Something they badly needed. And they made the plays on the ball that time. They made plays behind the line of scrimmage. They had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 tackles for loss in the game. They got their hands off on 5 passes, pass breakups, and that included the 2 picks. They forced 3 fumbles. And so that was, I mean, the raw numbers defensively didn't look good. They added playmaking.
Right, and that's what they needed, you know. And we talked about this last week. I don't know if I discussed it on the air, but you and I talked about it off the air. And like, turnovers are genuinely, outside of if you have a trump card at quarterback, turnovers are genuinely what dictate wins in the NFL. And so if you have a quarterback that takes care of the ball, you have, like we talked about with Kyler, you have a chance to win games. But if you have a defense that takes the ball away, which this Cardinals defense just didn't do very well, you have a chance to not just win games, you have a chance to win a lot of games. And that's where that next step comes in, is, you know, what are the playmakers that they need to create those turnovers more consistently? And I don't know. I mean, is that just pass rushers, right? Like, got disruptive players, or, you know, is it a different way to make plays on the ball? I genuinely don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just fluky. Jonathan Gannon says, you know, you can coach it to a point, but mostly it's about violence and speed. Because if you're at the ball fast, you get multiple guys at the ball, and you play with violence and hit hard, things happen. Whether that's tipped passes, whether that's a hurried throw, whether that's a forced fumble, a strip, that's kind of what they need. But yeah, and so it wasn't a great defensive performance, but they weathered the storm. Made plays when Dobbs made mistakes, and there you go, and it became a blowout. And so it's a game that you, because had they won on a nail biter, had they barely won this game, I think you don't come away from it feeling nearly as good. But a blowout win against a division rival, that has a cathartic feeling. To end the season, it's at home. It was good. With that, coming to next on races here at Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the overall takeaway of the season. How disappointing was it? Was it a failure? That's coming to next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now we can look on, you know, week after week, we're in the weeds. We're looking very micro at their situation and the, how expectations change, how the teams are doing, how the team is doing game to game, where they're in their progress. Like remember after they got blown out by Washington and Green Bay, there were people talking about is it time to blow it up? Is it time to fire Gannon already? It's not working. No. Let's look at ultimately, this is a team that doubled its win total to 8 wins. Went 3-3 of the division after going winless a year ago. And went into December, in the middle of the December, in the playoff race. And so, was for you the season a disappointment or not? Was the season a failure or not?
You know, it's one of those conversations that's tough to have, and you mentioned it before, but I think the way you have to look at it is the season itself was not a failure. How they arrived at the season, or, you know, where they're at in the season was the failure, if that makes sense. Like,
it does, 100%. That's perhaps the best way you can describe this. An 8-9 season entering the year. People, like when you predicted 9-8 and I predicted 8-9 back in May, people laughed because you're like, this team's not that good. And so before the season, we say, oh, if they're 8-9, third place in the division, and were competitive in the division up until the last couple of weeks, we're like, yeah, that's not a disappointment. That's making progress. But yeah, and that's the other point of it you're about to make. How they got there was disappointing.
Right, because like you said, if this team was just, you know, if it was a week-to-week thing, but it was the fact that it was swaths of games, right? Like we talked about it, you start 2-4, then you're 6-4, and you're like, all right, I think they figured it out, and then they're 7-7 at one point, or 7-8.
Well, then you're 6-7. And
yeah.
Then...
and you're just like, where's the consistency? And that's definitely the difficult part of this whole situation, and why there was a lot of disappointments, but also it's not a disappointing season. It's just how they got to the end of the season was disappointing.
Yes.
Because you just wanted, I mean, you wanted, and let's be honest, it's not just the Cardinals, but you wanted this game to mean something.
Yeah, it ended up being it meant nothing. It meant nothing at all, other than pride. Yeah, if you say that the season was a failure, no, the season was not a failure. Big picture, they made progress. They're close. They're far closer than they were. Yet last year, you felt like they're close to being a good team. This year, they're close to being a playoff team. Is it disappointing? Big picture, no. But if you look at when we went into the bye and we had our show, when they were 6-4, we said, you've got to win the division. Didn't we? We said that on the show. You have to win the division. So the season wasn't a failure. The season isn't a disappointment. But they failed the end of the season because of where they were. We did ratchet up expectations. They were in control of the NFC West. And honestly, all they needed to do was probably... Now, ultimately, you know, the Rams had their way late in the year and played well. But all they needed to do was beat Seattle once. And this would have been a very interesting end to the season. So the season wasn't a failure. The season wasn't a disappointment, big picture, but the end of the season was disappointing. The end of the season was a failure because there we were sitting in week 11 and week 12. We're like, we're in first place.
go win this division. And you had two games against Seattle. You had the Panthers. You had the Patriots. You're like, yeah, go win that division. And then we got to the point where they were struggling. We said if they can't beat the Panthers, they don't deserve to be a playoff team. And they lost to the Panthers, and they were eliminated from the playoff contention. And so,
yeah, so it worked out perfectly, right?
It did. We were rather prophetic in that week. If you can't beat the Panthers, you don't deserve to go to the playoffs. Well, they lost to the Panthers and got eliminated. So yeah. And that was funny because I didn't know that was an elimination scenario at that point.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, and we'll talk offseason. We got lots of offseason stuff to talk about, like, you know, the offensive side of the ball, the good, the bad, the defense side of the ball, the good and the bad. We're going to grade different positions, and that's we'll do that over the next few weeks. But, you know, overall, now we can take a breath, step back, and while we did ratchet up expectations, this team is still, big picture, on the right track.
Yeah, they're on schedule to where we want them to.
They're on schedule. They were a competitive bad team in 2023. In 2024, they were an inconsistent team that could have made the postseason. Okay, next year for the payoffs got to be the playoffs. The payoffs got to be the playoffs, or then that's when you really start questioning. People already question Kyler, but next year if you don't make that progress. Like, you really do have to look in the mirror and say, is Gannon and their Kyler the guys? Or are we going to be, like, if there's not that progress next year, you really wonder about, are we stuck? Are we stuck in the non-improvement in that middling for another few years? And so, yeah. Yeah. And with that, let's wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sierra podcast, the Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web, episode 631. We'll be back later this week, and we'll still, Seth and I will start scheduling out some times and topics and kind of how we're going to build, because we've got the offseason, we got free agency, we've got the draft, and we got the playoffs. So, I mean, we've got to do our playoff picks and props, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The people need their props, so they got to make some money, and we do too. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.